Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Right, it's Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. You're listening to the theme from Creature Features, which aired in the early 70s on WGN Channel 9 in Chicago. 50 years ago, it premiered. It also meant that WGN overnight legends Eddie Schwartz and Stephen Johnny were going to talk about Chicago's most frightening ghost stories in and around Chicagoland with the late Richard Crowe. For hours, they lamented about the ghostly hauntings of places like Graceland Cemetery, Bachelor's Grove, as well as Archer Avenue, Resurrection Mary, Montrose Point, the old lockup at the storied Maxwell Street Police Station, so much more. Now, a new Halloween tradition that we started almost 10 years ago is with our guest tonight, Ursula Bielski. Now, she's a historian, parapsychology enthusiast, founder of Chicago Hauntings, and host of PBS's The Hauntings of Chicago. She's been writing and lecturing about the supernatural for nearly 20 years. Recognized as a leading authority, she's the author of 5 popular and critically acclaimed books on the same subjects, and she grew up in a haunted house on Chicago's North Side. Good evening, Ursula.
Good evening, Dave. How I love to hear that Creature Features theme every year.
I know, right? It's tradition. I mean, it is tradition for us and on this station. Always great to have you with us. And by the way, if you folks ever want to jump into this conversation, we'll be talking for a little bit with Ursula about all hauntings Chicago. You got any questions for her? 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200. So tell folks, because this is one of the great ghost stories for you, is how you got into all this and how you found interest at an early age.
Absolutely. So many people know I grew up in a haunted house here on the north side of Chicago. I live about 2 miles west of Wrigley Field still, and just about a block away still from the house where I grew up. And, you know, we heard every single night footsteps walking up the stairs from the vestibule of the house to the second floor where the bedrooms were. And it was so funny, you know, I hadn't thought about this in years, but my dad, as you know, was a Chicago police officer. Mm-hmm. And my mom passed away 2 years ago, and the house was sold and it was torn down now. But as we were moving everything out of the house, for the first time in so many years, I realized, and I had passed by this window on the landing of the staircase my whole life. And I knew the story, but I always forgot about it. There was a bullet hole in the window that looked out on the landing of our staircase from when my dad shot at the ghost the very first night with his servant's revolver, because they had they bought the house after it was kind of abandoned for a while. And so the first night he and my mom were in the house, they heard someone walking around upstairs, and they thought someone was squatting in the house because it had been empty for a while. Mm. So he took his service revolver from the nightstand and went to confront whoever this was, and said he heard these footsteps and shot at this you know, whatever was coming up the stairs. And that bullet hole was in that window my entire life. And when we were packing up the house, I was like, oh my gosh,
still there.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what you experienced at an early age. Is you felt that presence?
Literally,
in the house.
My very first memory was of being woken up by those footsteps. I must have been 3 years old when it happened, and it was something that was always there every night. So, you know, and people think, oh, you get used to something like that. Mm-hmm. Never got used to it. It was always very disturbing, and I'm sure that is why I got this great interest in the paranormal, to understand what was happening in our house, and you know, luckily met many other people who had similar experiences, so that I was in solidarity with many, many thousands of people now over these many, many years of research.
Sure. Before we jump into some of these other stories, tell folks a little bit about Chicago Hauntings.
Oh, Chicago Hauntings is the tour company that we founded now 20 years ago.
Wow. That's great.
And we have, oh my gosh, I was counting the other day. We have taken something like 190,000 people on our tours over the years. And
that's
I
great.
Think myself, I was counting too, I've done over 3,400 ghost tours.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, we started out with just my husband, Dave, and I, Dave Cowan. He's also an historian and a writer. And it was just him driving the bus and me giving the tours, and we'd go out every night of the year, except Mondays, even if we had one person on the bus, and we just went out every night. And then we did that by ourselves for probably 5 years before we started to hire other guides and drivers. And, you know, now it's just grown exponentially, and we have tours not only in Chicago by bus. We have Lake County tours. We have ghost hunts. We have Archer Avenue, Resurrection Mary tours, and all sorts of special events. We have a big ghost conference every year. So it's really been amazing to meet all of these people, not only just not only locals, but tourists from all over the world who come on the tours to learn about Chicago history and our wonderful ghost stories, of course.
And you still have some Chicago tours available. I know Saturday night you're doing something. What are you doing Saturday?
Yes, we do our Halloween so happily on Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've got our bus tour Saturday night. We've got a ghost hunt tour in Lincoln Park, the old city cemetery grounds, of course, on Saturday night. And then we've got, we do a River North walking tour now, and we've got a matinee of that at 3 o'clock on Halloween for the kids. And then a little bit later one as well. So, yeah, a lot of stuff going on. We have our walking tours all week long as well.
Very cool. Well, I don't want to break up the momentum here, but when we come back, we're going to start off with the story of Resurrection Mary. Next on 720 WGN. It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. We're talking about all things haunted Chicago with Ursula Bielski. And if you have a haunted experience you'd like to share, call us 312-981-7200. All right, this is the big one. This is the one I always look forward to hearing about. And it's one of the most legendary stories in Chicago, probably one of the oldest ones that I heard of back in the 70s. And that is, Ursula, of Resurrection Mary.
Resurrection Mary is the classic Chicago ghost story. And, you know, Resurrection Mary is one of many, many so-called vanishing hitchhikers or phantom hitchhikers who have been reported all over the world for really thousands of years. You know, the story is always the same. Someone, usually a man, traveling alone, is riding along or driving along a deserted road at night and comes across this woman walking along the side of the road in a wedding dress or a party dress, and he offers her a ride home. But he can never quite get her to where she's going because she always vanishes from the car before they get to the destination. Well, our Resurrection Mary has become the most famous vanishing hitchhiker ever, because there are so many eyewitness accounts of her. These are not second and third hand stories. And what usually happens is that around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, a man will be traveling alone along Old Archer Avenue down in the Justice, Willow Springs, Hickory Hills area. And he'll see this woman walking along the side of the road, and she's usually wearing what's described as an old-fashioned party dress, usually a white dress. And sometimes she has no shoes on. Sometimes she has what's described as dancing shoes on. And the man will pull over and offer her a lift, and she will get in the car, not really saying anything. Sometimes she'll give an address in the back of the yards neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. Sometimes she'll say, just drive up Archer, just drive up Archer. But the gentleman will try to get her home, but he can never quite get her there, because usually as they pass the gates of Resurrection Cemetery on Archer Road, the girl will either vanish from the car or she will jump out of the moving car and run right through the cemetery fence or right through the locked cemetery gates. And there was a really famous incident that happened in the 1970s that actually appeared on that old TV show, That's Incredible. Remember that show?
Mm-hmm.
That used to be
on,
I think, on Channel 7.
Mm-hmm.
And the police officers who were on the scene at this particular event appeared on the show and testified to what they had seen. And that is that this truck driver was passing the cemetery late one night, and I saw something out of the corner of his eye, and he looked over, and there was a woman that had been locked inside the cemetery after closing time, and she was clutching the bars, looking very much afraid. So the driver turned the truck around, and he went to the police station back down the road, and he said, yeah, there's this girl locked in the cemetery, and she looks like she's going to die of fright. You better get over there. Mm-hmm. So they called the caretaker to meet them at the gates, but when they arrived there, the girl was nowhere to be found. But the bars, these solid bronze bars that the driver had seen this girl clutching, had been pried apart and mangled as if by some incredible force, with what they described as handprints burned into the bars, where you could actually see, you know, the lines of the fingers burned into the bars and the fingerprints burned into the bars. Well, of course, thousands of people came from all over in the weeks that followed to see these bars with these handprints that people believed that had been made by Resurrection Mary, the famous ghost. And the cemetery finally had the bars cut out and repaired and then soldered them back into place. But for years, whenever you passed there, you could see that that spot where the handprints had been had become discolored again and blackened. So even from the road, it was obvious where those handprints had been and those bars had been bent. It was almost as if if Mary was, you know, defying attempts to get rid of that evidence of her.
Well, who was Mary, though? There was many Marys, wasn't there?
Many, many Marys. Yeah. That's what's so fascinating about the story, too, is that, you know, every neighborhood you go to on the south side of Chicago, it's like there's a different girl who actually lived and died, usually along Arch Avenue in a car crash, that people tie to this story. The most famous story for many years was the story that Richard Crow had uncovered, and that was the connection to Mary Bergovi, who was a factory worker who lived on South Damon Avenue, right, Damon and 47th Street, back of the yards. And she had died in a car crash right by the Chicago River in the Chicago Loop in 1934. And was buried at Resurrection Cemetery. And there were some circumstances that led people to believe that Mary Bergovi was the girl that was now being seen along Archer Avenue by Mary's old friends when they were going to and from the old Willowbrook Ballroom on Saturday nights. And then, you know, after I wrote my first book, Chicago Haunts, back in, you know, the mid-1990s, this gentleman contacted me, Frank Andrew Jasich, and he lived in Summit, just that town that's just north of where the cemetery is.
Right.
And he told me that his parishioners at St. Joseph's in Summit believed that this little girl named Anna Norkus, who had died on the eve of her 13th birthday in 1927, was actually the girl who had become Resurrection Mary. And let me tell you, I put the picture, it's a fascinating story that he told me, and he had gathered so much evidence about it. And I actually put the communion, first communion photo of Anna Norkus, because she had been buried in her first communion dress because she had just recently made her first communion before her death. I put her picture on the cover of my second book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nine men contacted me and told me that that was the girl that they had picked up on Archer Avenue, with stories, some of them as early as the 1940s, some of them as recently as when I was writing. Someone had just picked her up a couple of months before he contacted me. And I had someone, people always say, do they still pick her up? Someone contacted me about 3 or 4 years ago who had just moved to Chicago, and he was a truck driver. He'd moved to Chicago to get a route where he could go home at night. And he was passing through downtown Summit about 4 o'clock in the morning, and he saw this girl, and he said, a first communion dress with a communion veil on, and short, blonde hair, like a bobbed haircut, standing on the corner, kind of dancing around and laughing at 4 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. And he had contacted me and said, I just moved into Chicago, and I was wondering if there were any ghost stories along Archer Avenue.
Really?
Wild.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, as a matter of fact, there are.
Well, and you talk about dancing. I mean, just down right by there is the Willowbrook Ballroom, or was the Willowbrook Ballroom before it burned down in 2016. But that whole stretch of Archer Avenue and the Willowbrook Ballroom are all tied in to this story in some way.
Yes. You know, I with this pandemic and everything with our tours were shut down for almost 6 months. And so I was just going crazy trying to come up with ways to keep in touch with, with our followers and everything. And I started making these little documentaries, and I made what turned out to be an hour long documentary about the ghosts of Archer Avenue, which is on YouTube if anyone's interested in watching it. But it really is fascinating, Dave. I have come to believe that Archer Avenue is what many people call a ley line. And this is like an ancient line or track in the environment that has like sacred or spiritual energies. And I think Native Americans really put down their roads or their trails over these sacred or spiritual lines of energy. Because you'll find that along these ancient trails, in Chicago, there are all of our diagonal streets, like Milwaukee, Grand sure. Avenue, right. Lincoln Avenue, Archer Avenue. These are all the ancient Indian trails. You find a lot of paranormal activity along these, and there is no more haunted version of this than Archer Avenue. We call it the Archer Avenue Triangle, actually. That whole area, that whole like Palos Forest Reserve division and Archer Avenue, Keene Avenue, all those cemeteries that are there, the water in the area too that we think really contributes to the paranormal activity. Water is such a great conduit for paranormal activity. But yeah, the Willowbrook Ballroom, you know, it was known famously as the place where Resurrection Mary had her last dance, and right. People would often dance with this mysterious woman there and then try to drive her home and be unable to because she'd vanish from the car. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the owners of the Willowbrook would talk to me all the time about the fact that the place was very haunted, not just by her. And there were lots of encounters with ghosts out on the dance floor and in different areas of the building. So it was a very actively haunted place. You know, not surprisingly, somewhere like that that was so beloved by so many people over so many years.
I know it's such a bummer that, I mean, it burned to the ground in October 2016. There's been conversations about rebuilding it. But, I mean, this is a place that hosted bands like Count Basie, the Glenn Miller Orchestra, Chubby Checker, the Village People. I mean, this was kind of a little local hub. But I remember my grandparents are buried at Resurrection Cemetery, and I remember going past the Willowbrook Ballroom just after I heard that story and saw the sign. And it freaked me out just knowing that's where so many of these stories came from.
It's so true. You know, we have our paranormal conference every year, and people come from all over the world, really, to come to this conference. And we were going to have our 13th one this year. Ironically, we weren't able to have it because of the COVID. Mm-hmm. But we had wanted to have it the Willowbrook year after year after year after year. So, like, you know, the number one destination we wanted to have it at. And it was always already booked with weddings because it's such a popular place. And that year, we got it. Oh. So it was like a week before that happened, we had our conference there. And it was absolutely fantastic. And then how spooky it was to see that news.
Yeah, it absolutely was. We're talking to Ursula Bielski, and if you've got a question for Ursula or if you've got a haunted experience you want to share, 312-981-7200. Ron, I know you're waiting on the line. We're going to talk about, he's got questions about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and we're going to do that after the break next on 720 WGN. All right, Dave Plyer here with you on 720 WGN. We're talking Haunted Chicago with Ursula Bielski. And Ursula, we're going to grab some phone calls here. Some folks have some questions for you. Ron, you're on 720 WGN. Good evening.
Hi, Dave, Ursula.
Nice to have you on. Absolutely.
About the site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre there on Clark Street, they say that the area now, I guess there's three trees where the wall was, where the men were actually gunned down, and they say that dogs won't even go near those trees. And I just want to know if any truth to that.
Yeah, that's so funny. When I was a little girl, I was credit my dad with also getting me interested in the history of Chicago and Chicago ghost stories. And that was one of the places that he used to take me when I was really little. And he would sit me on the fire plug there and say, now just wait. And we'd wait for someone to walk their dog past the site because my dad was convinced that every time a dog went by there, the dog would either, you know, cower and whine and cry and have to be like dragged pass the sight on its leash, not wanting to pass it, or the dog would react very violently and bark and howl. There was no fence up there at the time when I was little, as there is now. And so there, you know, you could actually go on that property. But this is a very old story. And, you know, dogs do have these, they have this awareness of the paranormal that we don't have. Of course, they can hear things beyond our hearing. They can see things beyond our seeing. So that's always a big indicator when domesticated animals especially react to things like this. I have found the most fascinating thing about that site, though, you know, there's also the legend of the bricks of the massacre wall being cursed. I actually have one of those. That wall now is in the Mob Museum in Las Vegas. You can go there and see it. And then there's also a ghost story about one of the victims of the massacre, Jimmy Clark, who was the brother-in-law of Bugs Moran, who died in the massacre. And Capone claimed that he was relentlessly haunted by the ghost of Jimmy Clark for the rest of his life. So that was also fascinating. But the most fascinating story to me was something that we were told. There was one night when I had taken a tour to that site. We always go to that site on our tours. And there is a senior citizen high rise just to the south of that lot, that vacant lot now. It's like a parking lot with some trees on it and grass, as you said. And then the other side is they're condos now, but the condos are in an old rooming house that was there at the time of the massacre. And people who live in both the senior citizen residence and in those condos, regularly they will come out of their buildings to tell us about the things that they see on that site and hear at that site. And they've seen these strange lights. They've seen what they describe as apparitions of gangsters wandering around there. They also say that they hear machine gun fire. They hear the barking of a dog. Famously, the mechanic's dog was tied up in the garage the morning of the massacre and witnessed the event. It's interesting that people hear the barking of a dog there. But this actually was so interesting to me. There was one resident of the senior citizen building who told us that after a fresh snow in the winter, they can sometimes see the outline of what looks like seven bodies in the snow, right where the wall would have been, where the men were lined up and shot and where they fell. That was a really cool story to me, but a lot of stories surrounding that infamous site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Ron, great question. I appreciate your call, and thanks for hanging in with us tonight.
Thank you, everyone.
My pleasure. All right, thank you. Casper, you're on 720 WGN.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Ursula, this is like really special to be on the air with you here.
Nice to talk to you.
Oh, well, thank you. I found out about you probably, I want to say late 99. Somebody had given me a book knowing my interest in all things creepy, and it was Chicago Haunt. I don't know if you were either co-authored that or you were a main author. I don't recall.
Yeah, that was just my book.
Oh, then there you go. I was fascinated by it, and it really gave me an opportunity to read about specific areas in Chicago, and having grown up in Chicago, it was exciting. The one thing that really drew me in even further, though, was when you either had, it was a website you guys had, I think it was graveyards.com, I think it was.
Yes.
There you go. And that is what piqued my interest, because ever since I was a little kid, I used to hang out, and this is going to sound really morbid, in graveyards. Well, no, I'm sure you'd appreciate it. And as a side note, real quick, before I forget, I think I saw an episode of Ghost Adventures that you were on there with Zach in when he did Chicago with the thing downtown. That was a great episode, by the way.
That episode they had done in Chicago was, it was like a double episode. We had done the Excalibur nightclub, the old Excalibur nightclub, And then they had gone down to, of course, Bachelor's Grove. The second part of the episode. But graveyards.com, that website is still operating. That website was actually founded by Matt Hookey, and he was a co-author with me on the book Graveyards of Chicago, which is kind of the armchair guide to every cemetery in Cook County, which is, it's out of print now, but it's still out there, and graveyards.com is still up. Matt now has moved to Seattle, and he is working on some other projects, but that site is still live, and he's got thousands and thousands and thousands of photographs from Cook County cemeteries on there. It's great.
Now, I will tell you, I don't hang out at cemeteries, but that was a thing. I mean, but am I wrong? That was a thing, you know, especially it was more of a European tradition that you go picnic in the cemetery grounds. Because
because
Resurrection is beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful. There's lakes everywhere. It's a gorgeous cemetery, but that's what you used to do. You used to bring your family, and you'd hang out there for the afternoon.
It wasn't creepy like people in America are. And Ursula, I know that you're Polish, no?
Yes.
It's in Poland, in Europe, that was, as he was saying, and it's true, it was a tradition to go there and spend time, whether it be with loved ones or just because of the beautiful landscaping. Can I can I ask you, I don't want to monopolize the time, but there is two things I wanted to ask briefly. The first one was, is my favorite spot was at, and I have family buried at Roseville. Grandfather, uncle, so do I. The Vihan Monument was my favorite to this day, and the inscription on that bench, I think it was something along the lines of until the daybreak and the shadows flee. But there used to be a statue in the middle, and I would stand on that because it had like a bowl below it where they had water and maybe at some point fish. This big statue. And I would stand there, and it was like a parabolic dome, and it sounded really cool. And then the last time I went there to visit my grandmother, who passed away several years ago, that statue's gone. Somebody stole that because it was bronze. So if you have any history on that, and the other question real quick, and I'll split. The episode of the one we're talking about, A Ghost Adventures, when Zach and them were there, you were there, and they interviewed you in the bathroom, and somebody touched your hair, and I remember the limelight from the 80s. I'm a little older. I used to go there when it was Excalibur, and then there's the place right next door. There's another club next door, a buddy of mine promoted for. Is there truth that that was used as a temporary morgue when that boat overturned, or is that not correct?
Right. Okay. So, yeah, the about the statue at Rose Hill, I was not aware that that statue was gone. It's possible that it was removed for cleaning or repairs. That sometimes happens if a family has trust and they will, you know, have obligations to periodically clean things or repair things like that. So hopefully that's all that is. But I was not aware of it. As far as the Excalibur goes, the old Limelight building, that's always some confusion. There was a funeral home that was right next to that building. That building that houses the old Excalibur and Limelight was the original Chicago Historical Society.
Right,
in fact,
right.
You can still see that over the lintel. But next door was a funeral home, and there were several of the victims of the Eastland disaster that were taken to that funeral home. But as far as we know, it does not seem that there were that building itself was used as a temporary morgue for the victims of the Eastland.
Talking about everything haunted Chicago with Ursula Bielski, 312-981-7200. Maggie, stay on the line. We're going to talk about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Player here on 720 WGN. We're talking about haunted Chicago with Ursula Bielski. Her website is chicagohauntings.com. She's got some great tours coming up about a lot of these places that we're talking about. I'm going to grab the phone line. Maggie, you're on 720 WGN. Good evening to you.
Hi, how are you? Talking about Bachelor's Grove, we lived around there 20 years ago, and I remember during Halloween, the police would have to go over there and cordon it off because, you know, everybody would go in there. But I have, and other people I know have seen orbs there. I don't know, does sometimes some of those places lose their energy over time, or are we just not aware of it as much?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that some places do. You know, when we talk about a true haunting, we're not talking about that there's an intelligent entity or, you know, a true ghost that is there interacting with things and influencing things. A true haunting is when there was some very emotional event. Usually it's associated with something like a murder or a sudden death. something violent, where that energy, the emotion of either the victim or of the people who are witnessing it, is so strong that it leaves a semi-permanent impression on the environment. And so that's when we talk about a haunted place, that's really what we're talking about. And that does dissipate over time, like any other energy, you know, or kind of like heat or impression like that. Bachelor's Grove, though, is not one of those places. Bachelor's Grove, you know, we've mentioned Richard Crowe a couple times already, as we always do. The late, great Chicago ghost hunter, he used to refer to something called the layer cake effect, where, and I think he talked about Bachelor's Grove as a good example of that, where you have a place which starts out as quote-unquote haunted, where maybe there is a ghost there, a true ghost, and people are experiencing something. So then other people come there to experience it. And those expectations perhaps take on almost a life of their own, where there's almost some people believe there are thought forms that are created, that people's kind of collective consciousness is creating apparitions, you know, audio apparitions, visual apparitions, and things like that. And then at Bachelor's Grove, we also have the problem of ritual activity that happened beginning in the 1960s.
Which is what?
Yeah, and this is what I really believe has contributed to making Bachelor's Grove a place where so much has been experienced. And it's a place where it kind of has like moods, like a person, where you don't quite know what you're going to get when you go there. You know, sometimes you go there and it's very peaceful and very happy, and there's a lot of people there. Sometimes you make friends there and things like that. And other times you go there and it can turn your life upside down. And again, it's that layer cake effect. So I think it really started with, you know, we had ghost stories there go dating back to the 1940s. We have a report that by the 1930s, someone was pretending to be a ghost to chase people out of the cemetery.
Oh, wow.
Then we had desecration starting as early as the 1930s and going on, you know, through the present time. So, you know, have all these factors that are coming in together. So somewhere like Bachelor's Grove, you know, it keeps recharging itself through all of these different things, the visitors, the ritual activity, the expectations. But then you have other places where it does wear off over time.
Does when you've been doing the tours there, you know, is there a cemetery in Chicago that you experienced something unusual, whether it was Graceland or Bachelor's Grove?
Yeah, well, Bachelor's Grove was a place. I did a television show a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Called Haunted Case Files. And if anyone's seen, I'm sure people have seen the series. I think it's on Destination America. And the whole series is about paranormal investigators, their most terrifying experiences. And so it was the three most terrifying experiences of my career. And that was number one. And it was in June of 2012. It was right after Richard Crowe had passed away. And I had actually, at Richard Crowe's funeral, I had met this young man who was a steward at Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, and he had offered to take me on a, like, kind of, you know, behind-the-scenes tour of the history of the cemetery. And so we had gone out there in the afternoon. It was a very, very hot day in June, and then we had gone and eaten dinner afterwards. And then he said, "Do you want to go back?" after it got dark. And I hadn't, no one should ever do this because it's forest preserve and it's off
sure.
limits after closing time, but this gentleman was a steward. So we went back in at night, and it was this magical experience. I mean, it was, you know, it was one of those magical experiences in life. You know what I'm talking about, where it's this kind of mystical experience. And it was great. And we went into the cemetery and, talked about the ghosts, and we recorded some audio tape and things like that. And then we left to go back to our cars, which we had parked over, you know, a few blocks away. So we had to walk through the woods to go to our cars, and we got lost. And I was with this young man who had, he had been at the steward of the cemetery for so many years. He estimated that he had been in the woods around the cemetery probably 2,000 times. And he had mapped and marked all of the trails around the cemetery. So he could walk this in his sleep. you know, blindfolded. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
We got lost, and we were lost for over 4 hours in the cemetery.
Wow.
And we started to have those experiences that people talk about at Bachelor's Grove, like seeing lights or seeing the lights of cars in the distance that disappear, seeing the lights of houses that disappear. And we would go to, we'd go like, oh, thank God it's the road, you know, because it's surrounded by like subdivisions and stuff, right? It's in the suburb. And then we started to realize that something was, you know, messing with us. Something was giving us these visions, these apparitions, and making us feel like we were nearing, you know, we had found safety, and then pulling it away from us.
Wow.
To scare us.
Wow. Wow. And those
and that's what happens at places like this. You know, these, they, everyone will tell you, I'm not a medium, I'm not a psychic, but they will, people who are sensitive will all tell you that a place like that, where there is negative energy like that, negative entities, they feed off of your fear, incite it at times too, you know, so that they can feed off of it. So it's an interesting place, for sure.
312-981-7200. More with Ursula after the news. All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. We're talking to Ursula Bielski. Her website, her company is ChicagoHauntings.com. She's got great tours that are out there, some still available. You can go online and check it all out. Thanks for hanging out with us as long as you have tonight. I've got two more stories I'd love you to share. One is about Marshall Fields and Company on State Street, now Macy's, of course. You know, it was plagued with death and disaster and paranormal ramifications for more than 100 years. Tell us a little bit about that eighth floor and Marshall Fields.
Oh, it's such a fascinating story. The eighth floor of Marshall Fields was used as a temporary morgue and hospital for victims of the Iroquois Theater fire of 1903. And that Iroquois Theater stood right where the Nederlander Theater is today, which was formerly the Oriental. This is, to this day, the worst single building fire in American history, was the Iroquois Theater fire, which happened on the afternoon of December 30th in 1903, and it took the lives of 602 people. And this is a, I mean, this was the first stop on our tours every night for the last 20 years. It is still one of, you know, we talked about, you know, energy dissipating. This is one of those places where it just never goes away. And I think there's a combination here of, you know, true hauntings, which, you know, is that residual energy and still, you know, intelligent spirits that are there that are actually interacting with people. But yeah, many, many people were taken to the eighth floor of Marshall Field and Company because the eighth floor was storage area at that time. And of course, the store had sheets and blankets and towels and everything else that they could use to aid the victims of the fire. But it's fascinating because there have been 11 suicides from the eighth floor. If the probably most of the listeners in the Chicago area at least have been in the building, it's an atrium building, so it's all open in the middle. And up until just a few years ago, you know, you could like lean over the railings around the atrium, but now they've put up these plexiglass.
Well, and it's closed now. So now the eighth floor, they sold it to another company, so it's no longer part of.
So it's interesting because the eighth floor is not as far as you can go, but the suicides have happened all from that floor. And I have had so many people over the years contact me who worked at Marshall Fields over the years to tell me that they were absolutely terrified of going on the eighth floor. In fact, just 2 years ago, I got a letter from this lovely old woman who lives in Tennessee now, and she had come to Chicago as a young a girl, you know, young woman, and she had got, she had written to Marshall Fields for a job, and she had gotten a job right before the Christmas season. She was so excited. This was, you know, really great job. being a sales girl at Marshall Fields in Chicago. She came to Chicago. She started her first day, and the manager took her up to the 8th floor where the lockers were at the time for the employees, mm-hmm. and told her, put your coat in the locker, and then I'll show you, around with your duties. So she put her coat in the locker, and she said at lunchtime, she told the manager, I can't stay in this job. She said the entire morning, her mind was occupied by the thought, I cannot go up to that floor every day and put my coat in that locker. Oh. She could not face the prospect of going up to that floor. So she left this sweet job at Marshall Fielding Company in Chicago as this young girl from Tennessee because she could not face the thought of going up to that floor each day.
I think I told you their furniture department was up there last, and I remember shopping for furniture up there and feeling, and I talked about this at the time with my wife too, and we were talking about the breezes that would kind of fly by us, and we were like, what? Yeah. It was the middle of the summer. So not knowing exactly where these just cool bursts of air were coming from. The other one is, and we've gotten some text on this too, the Congress Hotel. I mean, that's something that...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right?
You know, it's so funny. My whole family and I, we just watched the film 1408 the other night. I think it was two nights ago. Great film starring John Cusack as this jaded paranormal investigator that checks into this room in this hotel that is so haunted that they don't let it out anymore. And I think something like 56 or 57 people had committed suicide in this room over the years. Great movie based on a short story by Stephen King. Well, Stephen King, according to legend, based this story on the Congress Hotel, which supposedly has this room that was so haunted, they stopped letting it out to visitors. And in fact, there is a room, and there's been all sorts of talk about which room this is. There is a room on the 6th floor in the North Tower that has been wallpapered over so that the door is no longer there. And the window washers tell us that the furniture is still in the room. So they walled up the room with the furniture still inside. Very interesting. To me, it reminded me of a story that I read, a great book that I read a few years ago called Possessed by Thomas Allen, a journalist who was a seminarian at St. Louis University when the True Life Exorcist case was going on there, which The Exorcist is based on. That exorcism was held at St. Louis University and by Jesuits from the university at Alexian Brothers Hospital in St. Louis. And this journalist, Thomas Allen, was on the football team at the time, and the exorcist had invited some of these, burly seminarians to assist in the exorcism because oftentimes the victim will have this, superhuman strength. So there was a diary that was kept at that exorcism. And Tom Allen grew up and became a journalist later in life. And he wrote a book about the exorcism, this great book, including the diary in it. And he talked about in the afterword of that book that after the exorcism, they had to take all the furniture out of the hospital room where the exorcism had occurred and bind the furniture with prayer and then put it away in a storage facility so that no one could ever go near it again. Apparently, during an exorcism, when the demon is released, exorcised, it can go into an inanimate object in the room. So you have to, you can't destroy the furniture in the room because it could release the demon. So you have to kind of just hide it all away forever.
Wow.
So no one can ever go near it.
And that's
what it reminded me of.
That walled off that room. So they did that for that reason too?
I wonder, because there are old legends that there was an exorcism that was held at the Congress Hotel. I haven't been able to find any information about it, of course, but there is that story out there. So it would make sense that, those two go together. But the Congress Hotel is without a doubt, for my money, the most haunted hotel in the world. I could tell you stories all night long that would curl your hair. I've got a really
give me a couple. I've got a few minutes, so tell me. Give me your favorite.
Okay, yeah. I will. Well, I've stayed there four different times, and every single time had horrible experiences, including having the covers pulled off of me in my sleep.
Wow.
Having incessant knocking on the door all night. My daughter and I experienced the sound of two men whispering together at the foot of the bed, saying, "Do you think they're still awake? Do you think they're still awake?" Absolutely terrifying.
Wow.
We had, right before the COVID, my husband Dave was giving a tour. He had this gentleman on the tour with him that was staying at the Congress. He was a businessman who'd come to Chicago and for business. And he said, like, "Oh, I'm going to go on a ghost tour tonight and then go to our meetings tomorrow." So he had checked into his hotel room and was going to take a nap before he got up and got dressed to meet a friend of his for dinner and then go on the tour. And while he had laid down on the bed, and the phone in the room rang, and he was like, "Oh," so he picked it up, and there was this static on the phone, and then this voice, scratchy voice, said that it was going to come into the room and kill him in his sleep that night. So he was like, "Okay." So he calls down to the switchboard and was like, "Yeah, I just got this phone call. This is what happened." And the woman said, "Just hold on 1 minute." And so they put the manager on the phone, and the manager told him that no one had called the room. In fact, no one had called the room for months. For months.
Wow.
The last phone call that had come into the room was months before. And then when he was down, they switched rooms for him because he was totally freaked out. And then down in the lobby while he was waiting to meet his friend, he was talking to the bellman. The bellman told him that has happened in that room many times over the years.
Wow. And, of course, we're talking about the Congress Hotel. So many great stories, and I'm so thrilled you hung out with us as long as you did.
Oh, delightful as always, Dave. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And ChicagoHauntings.com is the website. And, again, great tours and some availability for Saturday night. Check it out again, ChicagoHauntings.com. Happy Halloween, Ursula.
To you too, Dave. Good night.
Good night.